Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, good morning, good morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jensen Brooks, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the Council of Elders talk show today. We have an interesting guest today, Mr. John L. Brown, and I have also sitting here in the studio with me, Mr. Oscar Bessent. Gentlemen, can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I just want to make sure. I want to give a special shout out today to Mr. Oscar Bessent, who's in the studio here with me. Oscar has been the broadcast engineer for over a year now, and he's done a superb job. I learned a lot from him, and he so graciously allowed me to just, the birdie fly away from the nest, I guess you can say. Oscar, say hello to everybody, man.
Hello, Jason, and fellow patrons. It's a pleasure to be up, and I'm ready to go.
All right, Oscar, thank you for coming on the show today, and thank you for your, this is our 1 year anniversary, and you brought us a long way, man. Appreciate it.
You're quite
welcome. All right. Guys, before we go too far, let me just give you a little bit of insight about the Council of Elders concept for new listeners. The purpose is for older people to give advice, counsel, and life experience to younger people, advice that can help them navigate successfully through life, deal with issues, and avoid some of the pitfalls that can affect everyone. The concept is based historically on African culture, where elders in the community had council members to help guide tribe members, settle disputes, and encourage young people. And so it's our dream to provide a platform so that if people want to talk to elder people about some of their challenging issues, they can. And on the same token, elder people might want to talk to some young people about what's going on in the world today. So it's a good interchange. Okay, so now we have as our special guest today, Mr. John L. Brown. And John grew up in Louisiana and joined the military and had a military career as well as some other careers. And we're going to be talking to him today about his book, Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes. John Brown, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You know, before I get started on the book, Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes, I wanted to tell the audience a little bit about me and how I got this far, you know, in life.
Mm-hmm.
My mother, she passed away when I was a baby. I think I was about 5 months old. And so I had to live with family members and stuff. And I tell you, you know, what some of the roads was bumpy and some of it was smooth. But it was a life experience, and I thank God for the experience because it made me a better person. I think so, you know, with the experience. I am a Vietnam veteran, you know, but I don't look at myself as a regular Vietnam veteran. I'm a combat veteran, okay? And that's a big difference from being in the bush fighting and being in the rear, you understand? And every now and then you can go to the club and get you a cold beer. So it's a big difference. It's a big difference.
And I'm quite sure,
you know, those that, I'm not saying those that was in the rear, you understand, didn't see no action. They probably got a few, you know, maybe the enemy tried to overrun, you know, their compound or, you know, got some incoming. But, you know, and as a combat veteran, what we did the extraordinary, you know, up and down mountains, getting in firefights. I mean, it was really, we didn't know when you woke up in the morning, you know, and cover your foxhole, what then, you didn't know if you was going to live or die, because it was a fight. It was fighting, and that's what I did. I'm a combat veteran. There's not that many of us combat veterans left to tell the story. The majority of them, we done been beat up with Agent Orange. We done been beat up with different diseases and all kind of stuff, you know. And, you know, we went through it. And I thank God every day, you know, that when I wake up and put my foot on the ground, you know, on the side of my bed, I thank God, man, thank you, Lord, you know, just for bringing me this far. And, you know, raise my son. I raised my son, you know, and had PTSD. PTSD is post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm 100% PTSD. You know, in other words, I dream about this stuff. And, you know, it's been rough. I'll be 71 years old, August 28th this year. And, man, look here, it's been a rough one. Well, so much for that. I just wanted to let people know, you know, that I'm not a perfect person. I, you know, my thinking is okay, but, you know, I've been through some challenges, you know, in life. Been through a lot. I mean, when I say a lot, okay, but God been with me, you know, every step of the way. So, but, you know, and I have two books out, you know. One of them is The Unspoken, What the World Don't Talk About. I have that book out. I have a documentary out, Mentally Blind, The Mentally Blind in America. And you can see the documentary on Amazon, and also the book is on Amazon and other internet, you know, bookstores. And also I did my last book I did was Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes. I sold a lot of copies on them things. I think it's around 13,000 copies I've sold. I don't like to tell people that because...
Debbie want to borrow some money from you, John.
You know, but I sold quite a few. And my last thing I did, and which I still do it periodically, I have a talk show, Uplifting Communities Talk Show, and it's a radio show. And also I had an Uplifting Community Talk Show television show. I want to give a big shout out to TD, Trice, John Jackson, Marilyn Jackson, you know, and all the people that was involved. I want to give a shout out to them, you know, and on the television side.
Okay.
So that's that.
Okay, John, now what, you grew up in Louisiana, a small town, right? What is the name of your hometown?
Well, I was raised in Lake Charles. I was born in a little town called Lortel, Louisiana, little small town, and they had a lot of sharecroppers. My family, they was actual slaves, okay, and when they freed the slave, I think it was, what, 1865 or something like that? Well, then, you know, they was in the South, okay? So they became, after they freed the slaves, well, my family became what they call sharecroppers. And I'm quite sure you guys heard of the term sharecropper before. So, you know, so that way they didn't have to leave their master. You know, a lot of them stayed right there on the plantation where it was. They had slaves in Louisiana. They had slaves in all down south. Well, we all know about that.
Right. You know, John, I was looking at a YouTube video the other night. It was talking about that. And it was talking about when they freed the slaves, you know, a lot of them, you know, the best option was to stay on the plantation because they had no money, they had no job, they had no, they couldn't read, you know. So, you know, that was one of the few options for them. So, but your family was one in that many lump of people that stayed on the plantation as sharecroppers. So, did you grow up in that environment yourself, or was that?
I can remember, you know, living on a plantation. I can remember living, you know, like that. We had cotton. My family, you know, harvest cotton, sweet potatoes, watermelons, okra. You know, plus we raised a lot of cows, we raised hogs, we raised chickens, you know. And I can remember some of the things. I can remember some of it because I can remember my uncle used to put me on the tractor, and then he would go in the yard, in the sweet potato yard. And that's the sweet potato yard, okay, in the field. That's the most sweetest, pleasant smell you're going to ever want to smell is a sweet potato field. What he does, he had to pull the vines up with that. And I say he put me on a tractor. And also my grandmother, I remember my grandmother used to bring eggs to the little market that we had. It was maybe about 3 miles or 2 miles from the house where we was at. And she'd get on a wagon, you know. And I rode with her a couple of times. I can remember that as a little boy. And she'd bring eggs, and then they'd give her flour. I can vaguely remember that. Mm-hmm.
She would
now, another thing.
Go ahead, John. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We moved to Lake Charles, Louisiana when I was 6 years old, you know, from off the farm.
Right. John, let me interrupt. I see a couple of people want to have a question or comment. So anyone, let's see, calling from area code 404. Let's see. I'm sorry, calling from area 404.
Can you hear me now?
Call the last number, 4880. You're on the air. Tell us your name and where you're calling from.
Well, can you hear me first? I don't know if you hear me or not. I've been speaking.
Yeah, I can hear
you
call.
Okay.
Where you calling from?
My name is Joseph Manuel. I'm calling from Lake Charles, Louisiana. Where your guess is fortunate to be from where I am from.
right. Joseph, you've been on the show show a few times. Good to hear your voice today. Do you have any questions or comments for your homeboy?
Yes, sir. Nice to hear from you again, too, Mr. Jenkins or
Brooks.
Brooks, Mr. Brooks. Yeah, Jensen Brooks. Yeah, good to hear from you. Been a while, man. I would just like to ask Mr. Brown, and we are related. Do you have any kind of opportunities, man, to share, you know, your experience, your strength, and your hope with young men that probably could use some of that, you know, and what all it took for you to go through those depression moments, and what kind of help you received, and, you know, was it some type of counseling, and how you benefited from not only the war to also survive mentally to go on with life, with all the obstacles you've been through and we go through every day in life. What kind of programs do military vets go through to get some help?
You know, that's so much of a good question, man. I mean, you know, like for me, when I was coming up and I had my family was the one that kept me going, you know, used to hug me and say nice things to me, you know. Like, for example, your mother, my Aunt Bi, you know, she was one of the sweetest lady I ever met in my whole entire life. That was my mama's sister. And I don't know the deal what her and my mama had when my mama was, you know, before my mama died. But it sounded like to me that she told my mama that I'm going to make sure your children going to be okay. And that's what she did. So we had back and we had, I mean, it was just so much. I had my grandmother, man, you know, my Aunt Mary, my Uncle Lee, my Uncle Joseph, my Aunt Velma. It was so many of them. And then I had my first cousins like you. You understand? We was all like brothers, man, Lee and Charles and, you know, Juniors and Kenneth and Martin. We was all like brothers. I wasn't left out. And so, you know, like I would tell any young person, the first thing that you have to do is build you a support group. And the best support group that you're going to get is your family.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, that's what I would tell them. Yeah, get with somebody that going, you know, that going to uplift you. You know, and then go from there.
All right. Thank you, Joseph. I think we have another caller here. I'm going to, if you have a question or comment, caller ending in 7473.
Calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Malcolm Hughes calling from Atlanta, Georgia. I have a comment and a question. My comment, you were talking about sharecropping. I had a cousin who was a little bit older, and he had to share. He worked on his dad's farm, of course, and he plowed fields and slop hogs and all of this. So he went to the city and got a job in a factory. And every time the boss, the supervisor at the factory gave them extra duties, a lot of the guys would complain, and they would call him all kind of names because he readily jumped on the task. But he told me, he said, man, once you get behind a mule and you have to plow about 10 acres, so working in this factory is a piece of cake. So I don't have no problem doing this. I don't care what these other guys do. But my question is this, John. You've written several books. And I've always wanted to write a book for the last 20, 25 years, but I've never gotten the discipline or the courage or whatever, sat down to do it. Could you tell us a little bit about your experience? How did you put your book together? How did you get it published? Could you talk on that a little bit? Even just getting started and outlining the chapters, you know, what prepared you or what motivated you to do it, and how did you go about organizing yourself to actually get that book written and published?
You know, I started off with my first book, okay, and it was The Unspoken, What the World Don't Talk About. All right. I remember when I was, I went to VS sent me to some program. I was in Orange, Texas. And, you know, it was like a counseling program or whatever, you know, when I came back from out the war. I was in Orange, Texas. Mm-hmm. And this guy was saying, you know, like, sometimes it's good for you to have a journal. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I stayed like about 4 days up in that little counseling thing. And I say, man, forget them people. I ain't thinking about them fools talking about all this here. But it was something stuck in my head is write a journal. So what I was doing, I was just writing certain things, you know, on a piece of paper and keeping it. All right. And so I got bad off and I went my PTSD had really got bad, and so the VA sent me to a PTSD program in Menlo Park in California, okay? And it was all combat veterans, man. I'm talking about these guys, like what my experience in Vietnam seemed like I was on vacation over there. When you listen at them talk, you know. So one day I had all my papers, man. I had maybe about a whole bunch of paper, you know. I was at my friend's house, and she wanted to read some of the stuff that I wrote, and so I had another friend came by to visit me, and so I went use our bathroom. And I had all my papers on there, and so he was reading it. And he said, man, this is interesting. And so, you know, and he said, man, you ought to go ahead on and turn this into a book. Well, I didn't know what to do. So during that time, I didn't know nothing about computers and stuff. But I found this company called Ex Libris. You ever heard of Ex Libris?
I have not heard of that.
Okay, well, Ex Libris, they are part of Random House. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so I got in contact with them, and they told me that they would go ahead and send them the manuscript, okay, the paper, all that paper I had. You know, and I just put it in the box, you understand, and sent them the whole doggone thing, and I numbered from one to, I had maybe 1,000, you know. And so so the guy, they read it, they charged me $2,700, okay, to do mm-hmm. the book. And so I got and I was so happy, the book, the cover was really nice. Man, I'm talking about really nice. So what I found out, I got in this club, was the Authors Club, okay, and they have millions of people, authors, in that club. So, and I learned a lot from these guys and girls, you know, up in that club. So they told me about a company called CreateSpace, because I was on my way to write another book. So they told me about CreateSpace. With CreateSpace, what it is a free company. It's free for you to publish your book. And for CreateSpace is owned by Amazon. Okay? And so that's what that's how I got it. And my second book I did, well, I had to do it myself, but it was free for me to publish. And also you get your book, you know, you only pay for printing of your book. But Ex Libris, if I order my book, that's why I don't ever promote it and take it with nowhere, because they charge me anywhere between $9 to $7 for one of my books. And, you know, for one, and that's pretty expensive. Okay, and with the other book, you know, well, I only pay like $2 for a book, a copy. And so it's all right for me to take the book and go on the book sign and then do, you know, and sell it for $5 and still make over $250. You know, but I sell them for $10 when I'm doing book signing, and I sell them on the internet, they're $15.99. So I would suggest anybody that want to do a book, you know, well, then, you know, pick your subject, start doing your homework, you know, doing some research on your subject, what you're going to talk about and stuff like that. And you're going to have footnotes, like if you take notice of my book, Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes, so some of the pages I got footnotes. And the footnotes is where I got my information from, you know. And so, you know, and go with one of these companies. If you're an unknown author, man, you go with one of these companies. You understand that won't charge you anything to publish your book.
Okay. Thanks for that information.
All right, all right. I see we have another. Thank you, Malcolm. I see we have another caller sitting on hold there. Caller 0745. Would you tell us your name and where you calling from? Caller 0745.
Oh yeah, Tommy Cole, how you doing?
All right, Tommy, thank you for calling in today.
Yes, sir. Love from Lake Charles. Look, I just want to commend John Brown. First of all, man, you know, if you get to meet John, you realize he's a down to earth good friend, and I want to commend him because he had, you know, he met me back in I guess the early teens of this new century, and he encouraged me. He motivated me and all that. I recall I used to be in stage plays and all that stuff, and he, you know, I called him one day, and he told me that, Tommy, he said, man, you ought to write a book or so, man, or write a stage play. And I never thought about it, and he told me that particular time. He said, Tommy, he said, sometime you're hanging around with people, people see your good, your great talents, but they don't encourage you. He said, but man, I see it. And man, he said, I'm telling you, man, you can do this. And by the grace of God, you know, I was able to write a stage play and a couple of books. And so, and I owe that to John. You know, I thank John. John has a lot of wisdom about himself. And if you see anything good in you, he's going to let you know. And that's what I like about him. And boy, when you get good advice, you have to add it to your life because it's gonna add to you, and it has. And I thank him so much.
No, thank you, Tommy. I really appreciate that, man. Yeah, I really, Tommy Cole. I don't know if you guys you ever heard of a movie called Roscoe Jenkins. Anybody ever move? Well, anyway, Tommy played in the movie with Martin Lawrence, with Roscoe Jenkins. Also, he played, oh, man, several, at least about 20 different movies with a lot of famous people. Tommy is a good friend of mine. This guy here is just, I mean, like a brother, you know. And I really appreciate that, Tommy, you know, talking like that, man. Talking rest real good. You know, I like that. You know, and that's what, you know, God put us all on earth for, man. Is nobody better than nobody. You know, I'm not better than Mr. Huge. Mr. Huge not better than me or not better than Mr. Jenkins. We all equal in God's eyes. And that's what we got to look at. We equal, man, and none of us better than nobody. You know, and we was put on this earth, you understand, put on this earth to do some special things on this earth. You know, like Mr. Jenkins. Mr. Jenkins was put on this earth to do the Council of Elders. That's what he wanted to do. Mr. Jenkins is over 60 years old. That's what he was put on there. Let's do it. He's doing it, too. He's doing it. He got a good team. I took notice, Mr. Huge, he always supporting Mr. Jenkins, you know, Mr. Jensen. Wow.
Right. Well, John, you the cause of be having this show. I mentioned it to you, and you said, well, let's do it, you know. Like I tell people, you have to often be careful what you wish for because somebody might put you on the spot. Tommy, you say you was in some movies. How did you get into movies, Tommy?
I got a friend named Dr. Nancy Shepherd. Now she wrote some real great books, and boy, y'all get a chance, y'all pull up Dr. Nancy Shepherd. And I one Sunday I come back from Dallas, Texas. My daughter was going to college up there, and I'm dead tired. You know, she called me. She says, Tommy, she said, I need you to take me down to Lake Arthur, Louisiana. I said, Mom, I'm tired, Mom. I said, I just got off the road for visiting my daughter. And, man, I kept saying that, so she fussed at me. She said, boy, get up out that bed and take me down to Lake Arthur. She says, I got a director down there who want to read my books, and you better audition for a part in the movie. And so I wound up going, and, man, this guy, you know, the director, he kept looking at me. I'm the last one in line. And he kept looking at me. I said, man, he's looking at me like he know me. And so when I finally got up front, he said, thank God. I said, for what? He says, hey, man, he said, this is a black movie. Bunch of white folk were in front of me. I said, well, I am black. And I wound up getting a part in the movie called Strange Fruit. And you guys are probably familiar with it. HBO showed it and all that stuff there. But, yeah, and that's how I got my start. And I started going from there. And, you know, like I say, but what nothing I did, it's just that the law was just good, you know, opening up doors. And, you know, all the folk I've met, you know, they've all meant something to me. Even Joseph and his brother Lee. Now, these guys, those are John, like, brothers. And, man, they're brothers to me. They look out for me. They care for me just like I'm a brother too, man. And so we all work together and try and be there for one another, man. And that's like John said, hey, we all put here to do a good work. And that's what we should be doing, you know, encouraging one another, loving one another, and lifting one another up, man.
That's right.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah.
All right. Oscar Bassett, what say you, man? What's going on with you, brother?
Everything's wonderful. Congratulations, Mr. Brown, on your good work. You obviously have a talent of encouragement. And encouragement is a blessing. God gives you that encouragement, and you keep passing it on to others, because only what you do for others really counts. So you keep bringing people to the well, brother, because that's what it's all about. May your book be a success. I look forward to taking a look at it and reading it and being encouraged by it. So, yeah, I've been involved with your protege for some time, and Mr. Brooks is a good man. So he was doing something that I thought was fascinating, interesting, and a blessing to the community. And just like your first project that I heard about, which was Uplifting Communities, that's what it's all about. And every time I see a kid that needs some help, I think about what we're trying to do and what you are trying to do. You're trying to bring people up. I mean, all my life, I'm an old man. I've been through some of the trials and tribulations you have. I did 20 years in the military. And I've heard the old story about crabs in a bucket. And so you're doing just the opposite. James Brown, the famous philosopher, said, I don't want nobody to give me nothing to open the door, and I get it myself.
Right.
So God bless you, my brother, and you keep going, and you keep struggling, and you keep showing other people the front door. So keep going.
Thank you.
All right. Thank God.
I wanted to say something to Oscar, if you don't mind, please.
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Yeah, Oscar, I've met you. I've been to your home one time, you know. We did some work together, you know, on the computer. And you're a good person, too, man. I can see that God put you down here, you understand, so that way you can open up doors for other people, too. And I feel pretty comfortable with you. You understand, especially doing the work with Mr. Jensen on Council of Elders, because we got so many, Oscar, you understand, if our young people can benefit from your experience, man. I mean, you know, like, it's a lot. It's a lot. You know, and we need more people like you out there on the streets. You know, like, the only thing bad about us older people, well, then we done got older, man, and it's, you know, our energy level is a little down. You understand? Yeah. And so, like I was trying to explain to Mr. But you know what they know? We need to, you know, just, you know, sometimes it's good for us to pass the baton. You understand?
Yeah,
we need to get with these young people and teach them and pass the baton. You know,
it hurts me. It hurts me every time I turn the news on the TV, listen to the radio. It's always about some black person, some young kid, and I feel like I'm not doing my job. I'm not teaching them. I was raised each one teach one, and you gotta lift the whole community up. Anytime you take one up, then you lift the whole community up, because that one's going to reach back and get another one. So I'm very encouraged by your work, and God knows that Mr. Brooks has been a wonderful student for you, and every time I hear about you, you're always doing something for somebody. So keep up your good work, and
thank you so much.
God knows that your reward is coming. It's coming, brother.
Right. And I was going to say, Oscar, you taught me a lot, and I learned a lot just by listening to you, and I hope to learn a lot more by listening to you. So I'm glad to have both of y'all, you know, here today. Both of y'all mean a lot to me, you know, and so thank God for you. I see there's a couple of people listening. If you have questions or comments for John, you press the 1 on your phone, and you can make questions or comments. John, let's talk a little bit about your book, Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes. What do you mean? What do you mean when you say mentally blind, open your eyes?
Okay. Mentally blind, open your eyes. I remember the time, and it's still going on right now today. Okay. If there's any work going on in the poor community, especially African-American communities, you understand? And I don't mean to say this to kind of like down other nationalities. No, that's not my intention. But it's always other nationalities is working on the street.
That's a useful radiation.
The radiation is what's making it possible for poverty. So we need to turn it back into a radiation. Looks like I got somebody who got a little toddler want to take. Get some attention. Can you hear me, John?
Doesn't work like that.
John, can you hear me? John, can you hear me? I'm sorry, John, can you hear me?
I hear you.
Okay, great, okay. I'm sorry, I was, what were you saying?
You muted me, huh?
Okay. My bad, go ahead, John.
Okay, now what you want me to do?
Okay. Oh yeah, I was. So I made a mistake and muted you. You were telling me about kind of the premise behind your book, "Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes."
The title. Okay, what it is that if it's like I said, you know, some people don't like to hear that. Okay, but sometimes you understand we have to tell the truth. And how do you uplift the communities? You uplift the community by telling the truth. Okay? And what I'm saying is that we in a community, we have what they call district managers. Okay, and if there's any constructions going on in a community, they should, if it's labor or whatever, you don't find no blacks in the community working on the streets, man. They're not working. And that's when I'm telling them, hey, look here, you will walk to the store and see something going on the streets, you know, they working on the streets or whatever, is nobody, it's all other nationalities working on them projects. No blacks on them. And that's what made me write that book, Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes. You understand? And there's other stuff, too. You know, for example, you know, it's monies in our community that our government give, and they don't even use the money, you understand, to better the housing situation, to better the school situation, to better the community, the poor community. And it's like, you understand, that, you know, poverty, you know, and it's like it's big money into poverty. They don't want to end it. You know, and I don't mean no harm by saying that, but I'm telling the truth, man.
Right, right. John, I have someone that's holding. Let me see if I can let them in. Caller 0965. Caller 0965.
I'm sorry. Hi, this is Sandra from Memphis. How y'all doing?
Hello,
all right, Sandra.
Hi, I was just listening in, and I was a little late, but I did hear the gentleman about the book and the actor that said that, you know, he didn't do anything. You know, it was just God's will to give him that part. And I guess what I've been hearing, it's been uplifting because, you know, God does give us free will, and he went to the audition. And because he showed up, he got the part. And James wrote the book, you know, so now he's an author. And so we have free will, but we just have to do it. And I was thinking about that, listening to you guys, and I've been saying I want to write a book. And just listening to your process and what you went through in journaling was very inspirational for me to hear. And I feel like I needed to be on this show today so I could hear that. So, you know, God put me here, but I had to turn it on so I could hear it. And then what you just said about, you know, poverty, I was listening to that, and a lot of our people are just not educated. And we look at the word ignorant like it's a bad word, but it's not. It's not a bad word. It's just that we're just ignorant to we're just ignorant to a lot of things that wealthy people and other people know. And we just don't know. But we have to open up our minds so we can gather this information. You know, it's like during COVID, they had the PPP loan. And Jansen, we were trying to educate business owners. You know, you can apply for this PPP loan. And a lot of people did, but a lot of people didn't. Because a lot of times our people are afraid to do things that other people aren't. They'll take that chance and do it. And I wish more people would have applied for the PPP loan. I mean, I did. I'm a small business owner. And it was forgiven. So most of those loans that was under a certain amount of money was forgiven. And I've had some people, black people, that got it, then got afraid and gave it back. What are you afraid of when you got all these big businesses out there getting this money? So sometimes, you know, we just have lack of knowledge. We've never done it before. Other people do it all the time. How do the rich continue to be wealthy? You know, and we just have a mindset that wealthy people don't have. And we try to explain people, you know, even leaving a legacy. You know, insurance is the simplest thing you can do to leave a legacy to somebody. You have so many wealthy people leaving their kids million-dollar insurance policies, and now that's generational wealth. You know, but like our people, they may say, "Did nobody leave me nothing? I don't want to leave nobody else nothing." That's a messed up mindset.
That's right.
You know, so I understand what you're saying. We just got to educate our people so we as a people can do better. But thank you so much. I appreciate, you know, listening to you guys. It's uplifted me. It's going to make me start writing my journal and eventually get my book going.
Hey, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, and I appreciate you, you know, and what the whole thing in a nutshell, what I was saying is that we have a district manager. Remember what I first started? We have a district manager. If enough of us get together and we see something in our community that need uplifting. Well, find out who your district manager is, okay? And if you need money in the community, if you need whatever you need, find out who your district manager is. Set up a meeting, you understand, and talk to your district manager because he's supposed to be or she's supposed to be your representative for that community.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get this thing going. You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
Mentally blind, open your eyes.
I'm going to have to get that book.
It's real.
Right, right. Well, let's see. John, just on a little lighter note, you were telling me about some of the incidences that happened in your childhood, and you were the first one I ever heard talk about Blackbird Gumbo.
Say what?
What's up with
you?
Hey, Tommy. Hey, Joe. I don't know if Joe's still on the line. Joe is my cousin. I remember we used to get our BB guns and go in the woods. You remember that, Tommy? And kill blackbirds and cook them. You remember that?
Oh, me? Yeah, Joe, right? Yeah, I was the whole many blackbird gumbo, fried blackbirds, yeah.
I was telling Tommy that, you know, I mean, we did a lot. He never heard of people cooking blackbirds.
I never heard of it. Blackbird, what all went into blackbird gumbo anyway? Blackbirds, what else?
What? Gumbo.
You know, you make a gumbo with it, you know? Some people put ducks. Some people cook, you know, I mean, a lot of stuff. They put food, man. I mean, they cook, you know? And blackbirds,
right,
we used to go hunting blackbirds in the woods all the time.
Well, yeah,
wow.
Can I say something right quick, John, if you don't mind? A blackbird is not, the meat is not the gumbo. The root and the other, and the onions and stuff, that is the gumbo. And what you put in it is up to you. You know, you can put turtle. You can put whatever kind of meat you want, rabbit, you know, squirrel, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just part of the gumbo. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that was interesting. I know where I come from. We had plenty of possum and rabbit, you know, and you name it, squirrels. Coons, but I never remember anybody about my area eating blackbird. Maybe they did, and I didn't know about it. But
yeah, Oscar, yeah, I'm the same way. I'm from the country also, and I've never heard of it. Every time we killed a turtle, I knew a lady who always wanted the turtle to daddy shot. And so he would give the turtle to her, and she would make turtle soup. So I'd heard about that. And, of course, I've heard of possum and coon and squirrel and rabbit. I've eaten them all. But, I got to admit, I never heard of blackbird gumbo. I'm sorry.
Well,
we've had a lot of blackbirds.
But I do know that when you're looking for something to eat, whatever it takes to fill your stomach is what you eat.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I tell you what, it was plenty of blackbirds where I was from. If we would have known about them, I'm sure that there was plenty of them, I tell you that.
We used to go out there, you know, have our little BB guns and stuff like that. Oh, man, go in the woods. And where Jotam was living, there was right across the street was a number of woods. And we'll go up in there, man, and we'd cook up in there and everything. Joe used to go in the icebox and get some of his mama's eggs. You remember that, Joe?
Oh, yeah, camp out all the time. Cook up.
Yep.
Ah, boy. Well, John... Now you went to Vietnam at the age of 18 years old.
Right.
And so and you ended up in the jungles of Vietnam. John, and your way back, I always hear about the veterans coming back. You know, during that time, in the 60s and 70s, there was a lot of anti-war, you know, sentiment going on. Did you run into any of that?
Yes. I can remember my first tour in Vietnam. I went there in I think it was January of 1969. And in 1970, well, I came back, I think it was February in 70, I came back and I went to Camp Pendleton. Well, they sent us to Camp Pendleton. But we had to go to Altoona Air Force Base, okay? And then because I was stationed at Camp Pendleton, I was in the Marines. And man, you couldn't even get through the gate back in 1970. Over at Altoona. You couldn't get through the, no, it was not Altoona. Altoona was another spot. There was Norton Air Force Base. That was around Pasadena, California. And you couldn't even get through the gates because, you know, they was throwing bottles and rocks and all kind of stuff, you know, at the bus. You know, they bust us from the airport to the, what you call, you know, and to Norton Air Force Base, and then they sent us to Camp Pendleton. But they was throwing bottles and all kind of stuff. I remember that, you know, calling us all kind of names, baby killers and stuff. And I remember when I was in Houston, Texas, I had my uniform on, and they had warned us not to wear our uniforms. Okay, but I had a couple of ribbons that I had from Vietnam, and I was proud of my ribbons, boy. And so I wore my uniform home, and I was in Houston, Texas, waiting on one of them little small planes to get to Lake Charles. And this lady came up to me, and she started calling me all kind of names, baby killers and all kind of stuff, man. And I got scared. You know, I mean, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. I just, you know, and they had some other people that had some other guys there, you know, from the Army, and they came to my rescue. You know, they came and they, you know, stuck with me till my plane came. They came and sit down. They was in plain clothes. They wasn't in uniform. And they was telling me, this is not a good time for you to wear a uniform going home. And when you go back to the base after your 30-day leave, you know, don't wear no uniform. So they was actually telling people don't wear no uniforms.
Now, what year was this, John?
That was back in 70.
1970, okay. Yeah, that was
right.
That was a tough time. Well, you know what? I just want to express my appreciation to you and Oscar and, you know, veterans or, you know, that might be listening. Because if it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't have the freedom that we have now, you know. People take it for granted, but in other countries, it's almost like slavery still, you know, where they have dictators and stuff. But so I think all the veterans for your service because, you know, again, if it wasn't for you, ain't no telling where we would be. So thanks again, guys. We got about 6 minutes.
Thank you.
And if anybody has a question or comment, I see I have a person here on 8473. I'm going to let you in before you have a question or comment. Caller 8473, yeah. Would you state your name, where you're calling from?
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Ron Rogers, Sacramento, California. And I, like yourself, Jensen, just want to chime in and thank the veterans for doing what they did. This was a terrible time, gentlemen. I mean, because we were doing what we thought was right, and then we come home and everybody's saying we were wrong for doing what we thought was right. And with that was the the racism. So I mean, we've been fighting this fight for a long time, and it's not like we're gonna have to give it up to win it. We're gonna have to stay in it. So again, I just wanted to mention that this morning and let you know that it's good to hear about them old times when times were simpler. So God bless you guys. Keep on doing what you're doing.
Right, right, right. Ron, I believe you and John about the same age. You 70, and John, you 70?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so y'all came up during the, you got me by a couple years. I'm y'all junior, but still.
You're still a baby, man.
It's good for somebody to tell you that, John. But when I wake up in the morning sometimes, I don't feel like no baby.
Yeah. I hear that.
Well, I got one more question for John, if I can, right quick.
Go ahead.
Yeah, John, look, I'm kind of forgetting, you know, old age, senior citizen years, whatever. But the book, Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes, am I saying that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what's the other one?
The Unspoken, What the World Don't Talk About.
I think it's the one, The Unspoken, What the World Don't Talk About, the one that I'm always trying to get you to promote. Is that the one?
No, it's the one that's Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes. That's okay. The one that you always trying to get me to promote. Okay. That's the one I had a lot of success in, yeah. That in the book, Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes. Lots and lots, yeah, of success.
And it's an eye opener. A lot of people can check into it because there's a lot of things that we're not speaking about that need to be spoken on.
Right.
And,
right.
That's what,
right,
it's based on is we need to open our eyes. It's time. Now is the time before too late.
Well, it's a lot of, you know, like when I did I did a lot of research, and I didn't know this here. You know, like your dumps and stuff like that, you know. A lot of the homes that we live in, that we buy these homes and stuff, especially in African-American communities, there was dumps on there, man. A lot of that land is contaminated.
Yeah.
I talk a little bit about it, you understand, but I don't talk a lot about it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And, but, you know, like, it's a lot of subjects, you know, up in here that I just elaborate on, you understand, just a little bit. You know, I talk about the beauty of black people. Okay. Also, I talk about our black ancestors.
Your family.
You know, how black ancestors. I talk about death and family confusion. You know, family secrets is a big one.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much family secrets until it's pathetic. I'm talking about big time family secrets, you know?
Yeah.
Yep. So.
Right, right. Well, we have about another minute and a half. John, tell everybody how they can get your books.
Okay, yeah, you can go to Amazon. .com and just type in Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes, you know, and you can order it from Amazon. Plus, once you can go to Google and type in Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes, and it's on in different internet bookstores. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can do that. And The Unspoken, you can get it off of Amazon. Also, I have the documentary, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can get that on Amazon, too. It's The Mentally Blind in America. And that right there is when I went out and did some filming and interviewed some people, and they talked about what's bothering them, how can the government help them. I've interviewed one guy. He was homeless. You understand? He had been homeless like for 18 years.
We've only got a few seconds left, and I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
Oh, okay.
Everybody for listening today. Tune in next week, same time, same station.
Thank you.
Okay, looks like the stream is over here, I think, guys. So I'm going to hang up. Hey, everybody, thanks for calling in today.
All right, then. Okay, well, you take good care. And everybody said to y'all, thanks a lot. Okay, and thanks a lot, sister, the one that called in. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.